I have these friends, Dan and Sheila. Actually, they're podcast hosts.
Welcome to Profiling Criminal Minds. I'm Dan.
And I'm Dr. Redman.
And we are here to talk about Millennium Season 2. The season that proves that, you know what? This is a solid show. It's like every show, it has its ups and downs, but I think this is a darn fine set of episodes. Although one of them is going to suffer from what I like to call, what's a nice way to say this? This could have been an episode of The X-Files. Is that fair?
The first one could have been an episode of The X-Files.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Second one could have been an episode of Criminal Minds.
I mean, a little. I think there's enough of Millennium in that second episode. But then again, that's not really a statement against there being a ton of Millennium, given our feelings about how much Criminal Minds owes to the show Millennium.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, sometimes I'm
It's less... I mean, I hate to say it, you know, because I don't want this to sound too negative, but it's less exploitative than the version on Criminal Minds would have been.
Well, yeah, but that's Criminal Minds. You know, come on, you know.
Right,
I want to go down that friggin' road.
I know.
Season 16 was wonderful.
Yeah.
We got our shout out.
Oh, we did.
Not
it was fantastic.
Going to complain.
Have we ever
it?
Complained about season 16? I mean, do we? No, of course not.
No.
Here are our complaints about season 16. I think Garcia was too hard on Green.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, he betrayed her trust, but he used that betrayed trust to save David Rossi's life. So don't give me this nonsense where you can't forgive him ever. I'm just saying, Derek Morgan did much worse stuff to you.
Let's put it this way. That is a Garcia response, I am sure, since the guy is going to be back in season 17.
Yeah, we'll see more of him and we could continue that story. They work so well as a couple. That's all I'm saying. I really got invested in them as a couple. I'm not going to pretend I'm too cool to admit that.
And just remember, if the fans are like us and got invested in them as a couple, and
then
out of line, guess what?
We're going to see more of it. You're right.
No, we're going to see more of it. Remember, this is a fan-driven show.
I know. It's one of the things I love about it. All right.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know,
speaking of a show that has, and now to move on to a show that cares nothing about what its viewers want.
Okay. Here's the funny thing is that they won Emmys. They had 31 nominations.
Wow.
31 nominations.
That's incredible.
And, I mean, that's another reason why it lasted.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, from a production standpoint, it's one of the best looking shows. I mean, I have to assume a bunch of them were technical, but were there any like script nominations as well?
Okay. Well, now I have
to go. You know what? She'll check while I'm explaining what the episode's about. All right. So this is the episode.
Can you explain this episode was about?
It's a little difficult. I'm not going to pretend it's not a little difficult to explain what this episode is about because Frank is hired by someone. A government agency to track down a man who has disappeared, who showed up at a hospital screaming about trucks, screaming about conspiracies, screaming about trucks, screaming about apparently nonsense. Who knows? Right. And this man mysteriously needs to be tracked down because, and this is the key part, he showed up at a hospital flanked and he was brought to a hospital by a cab driver who's trying to do the right thing, but then guys from the CDC showed up and locked the place down. Ooh.
Yeah.
And he just narrowly escaped. And so the question is, where has he gotten to since? And so Frank has been hired to find him. And of course he but meanwhile, we open up the episode with Brian helping Frank set up a call tracking system for his house, because Frank has been getting a lot of hangups, you know, where people dial phone number and then you pick up, they hang up. And Brian is going to attempt to figure out who is making these calls.
Yeah.
Imagine living in an age when you didn't know who was calling you.
Well, I mean, still people can still put anonymous on it.
You can. It's just hard. I mean, now I guess we have call spoofing instead.
Yes.
Like, it used to be you would block, but now you spoof a fake number. I mean, that's the way it's done today. And it is, in many ways, more insidious. But that's not what we're here to talk about. We don't care about that kind of technological stuff. No. But the point is, Brian is there, and we're entertained by Brian, who's a very likable nerd character. I find Brian very entertaining. I don't think I'm the only one. We'll tell a story about that later. Well, in the show.
Yeah. Well, as we go through this episode, I just have to say up front, I found this episode, I don't know why, like until you get to the end.
Yeah.
It, I don't know. There was something about this episode that I was not fond of.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
You'll figure out what it was. Yeah.
Well, part of it is the ending, you know, and I'm just going, say what? Okay. Well, we'll get there. And so we're going to take on the human genome.
Well, that's the way into it. And it's weird because there's a core of something really interesting in this episode. And I found out that the writer was very unhappy with the rewrites that chose to focus way more on what he feels the episode, like the less important part of the episode, this human genome stuff, that rather than what he thought was the heart of the episode, which is every time you want to do an experiment, you need human subjects, and that means sacrificing black people.
Yeah, because that was at the beginning. It was very clear.
What's going on here?
It's like they lost their way about halfway through the episode.
Well, and according to the writer, you know, apparently that was Fox. That was Fox's standards and practices saying you can't talk extensively about how the U.S. government, you know, uses black people as guinea pigs in their experiments. Yeah, and I mean, okay. for the love of God, there's a moment in the episode where they point out that, like, the president apologized for the Tuskegee syphilis experiments.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing for a guy in a black newspaper to go out of his way to point out.
Well, yeah, no, it's the crazy guy who's going on about Tuskegee.
Yeah, but then the reporter says, that's old news. The president has apologized for that.
I guess, I mean, that's the kind of thing that kind of bothered me.
Yeah, it's a weird thing for him to say in that situation.
A weird thing for him to say because he supposedly was running it in an alternative black
press. Exactly.
Press.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was like, I guess that's where it kind of,
inauthentic.
Yeah. I kind of lost my interest. And then they go to the end. Right. And sort of bring it back, but don't make, I had problems with this essay with this episode. And if you say that the writer wanted to focus more on that, you know, then
it makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
It makes a lot more sense. But I mean, even at the end, spoiler alert, where it turns out that the guy who's raving, the lunatic at the beginning.
Yeah.
Who's ranting and raving is actually running the project.
Is the doctor in charge of it. And he got presumably accidentally infected.
Yeah. Infected himself. That's Clarence Williams III.
Clarence Williams III. You know, from Mod Squad.
Mod Squad.
And a little show called Twin Peaks.
Yes.
Which he was, you know, only on as a little cute thing because Peggy Lee was on Twin Peaks. But it was still great seeing them back together.
It was just like there was something
missing
in this that lost me.
Yeah.
I got, you know, I kind of lost. I just switched to the fact that they couldn't find anything that was causing the pathogen.
Yeah.
And they come to, you know, the idea that there were rogue people running the Human Genome Project.
That the, like, there is actually a secret thing that the Human Genome Project is actually trying to accomplish. They're trying to reprogram DNA to transform you into a different kind of person. And so they had essentially created a strange psychosis, right? A very specific kind of psychosis. And then you get one of the weirdest parts of the episode, which is they are able to get a blood test. So this guy goes, this homeless guy goes nuts, right? And this homeless guy goes nuts and he is shot by the cops because they can't, you know, they try to tase him and it doesn't work. And he gets shot by the cops and it's, you know, horrible because it's always horrible when that happens. And so then Frank has to infiltrate and get a blood test because he sees that the fake CDC guys are there. So he has to carefully go in to get a blood test for the group. Peter has agreed to take on the case. Remember, Frank was not working for the group in this. He was hired to find this Clarence Williams because he's the best at understanding, getting inside people's heads and finding people. And so they knew who to go to. But the important part is, and Frank has a reputation.
Yes.
But the thing that's so weird about it is, so he gets the DNA test, the blood test, and they check it, and then you get, like, one of the weirdest lines in recent memory, because we're told that he had the exact same kind of mental illness as Clarence Williams had, because it matches Clarence Williams' blood sample, and I'm like, did they do a blood test for mental illness? I'm pretty sure you can't do a blood test for mental illness.
No, I think what they were saying... No, it's not a blood... They did it... Okay.
Because he has Clarence Williams' blood, and then he has the other guy's blood, and they test them both, and they have the same DNA strands?
Yeah, they have the same anomaly in the DNA strands.
Yeah, but but as a consequence, it's suggesting that their DNA caused them to go nuts.
Yeah, the changes to the DNA caused them to go nuts.
Yeah, and that sounds very strange to me.
Okay, yes. Well, remember the Human Genome Project isn't finished at this point.
That's true, yeah.
Like, this is all anticipating what it can do. But remember, I mean, it can do amazing things.
It can, yeah.
Now that we know, I mean, you know, and now that they've got CRISPR, for God, you know, and now they've got this whole thing. The human genome, you know, mapping the human genome became scary.
Yeah, it
in
did.
In many ways, because while they got, I think it was weird. Well, yes, but you see, for schizophrenia, for example, there is a genetic component.
Yes.
You know, there's you have to have the genetic and the environmental stuff all come together, but there is a genetic component to schizophrenia, for example. So, but what they found, I did get it, I guess. I just found it was weird.
You see why I found that idea weird, right?
Okay, yes, but because there is a genetic component, it does mean that if you mess around with genes, you could cause mental illness.
Yeah, and then...
Okay, and because it is just DNA.
That's true. Okay?
So, yes, and so, but this weird and all, they don't find any plague. There's nothing in it. The CDC shouldn't have been there. There was, you know, these guys come in saying that they're infected.
We never actually do get an explanation for why Clarence Williams was coughing up blood everywhere.
Yeah, no, well, yes, yeah, that's right. But apparently that would have been part of the illness, right? And he gets it, like, because what happens the first time, Frank gets blood on him and on his thing. They check that, and then they check Clarence, the first guy, then they get Clarence Williams, the second, who is considered patient zero.
Yeah.
That's what's, to me, was weird. He wasn't the, but anyway.
Well, no, he's the guy. I mean, he's the first guy they were aware of.
Yes. That they were aware of. And then, And he's going, they've got him in on tape, and he's screaming about all of this business.
Because he tried to go to the press, and he tried to go, right? Because when they picked him up at the cab, he had just been thrown out of a newspaper office where he tried to incoherently tell them about these, about how genes were being altered, but he was so incoherent in what he was saying, you know, they just thought this was a random crazy guy.
Yeah, and I mean, it makes sense. Now it's our cab driver who goes in to see him because feels bad about him.
Yeah.
And
helps him escape and takes him to the alternative press.
And takes him to the alternative press because it turns out that the cab driver guy, there's another guy. So our guy wasn't patient zero.
Yeah.
They're really...
yeah, we find out about the guy at the cab driver leads Frank to this guy in the homeless encampment who's saying the exact same things.
Yes, and this guy, but it, as our cab driver says, he said, I used to think he was crazy and wasn't making any sense. And now he does, because he's always talking about the trucks as well.
Yeah. Now I've got two people saying this to me.
Yeah, and I've got, there's more than one person here, and it's like, okay.
The jumping around this episode does is a little weird.
It is disconcerting, and it doesn't take us, because we never quite find out what the screaming about the trucks is.
Well, no, I mean, he explains the trucks as a metaphor, right? That what they're trying to do is turn people into the equivalent of vehicles, just machines to do a job. As he says, a truck doesn't know what kind of truck it is. It just knows that someone is driving it to do something. And he thinks that the goal and what this guy, the quote unquote insane guy at the homeless encampment is saying, is that what they're trying to do is turn humans into the equivalent of trucks, just a machine to do whatever the people in power want it to do at any given moment.
Yeah, and what I was thinking, yeah, you're right. They did sort of explain that. I guess I just am having the metaphor.
Yeah.
And Frank says he doesn't get it, and the guy says, "Well, you're not black. You don't get it. You're not black."
Yeah, which is a good point.
You know, and that is the whole point with this. I don't know exactly what Fox made them.
I'd be interested to find out what they cut, because right at the end of the episode, Frank is essentially saying that Clarence Williams was responsible for the Rwandan genocide.
Yeah, for the Rwandan genocide.
Which is, wow.
You know, like this was what made the episode in the middle so weird.
Yeah.
And when we find out that it's, you know, I mean, obviously there is absolutely not one bit of conscience in this man.
Yeah.
Right? So this is, they're doing experiments to see if they can turn people
into monsters, basically.
Into monsters, basically. But this business with sense and anti-sense, okay, so that's something that they're using to refer to the Human Genome Project.
Yes.
Okay, but it, you know, it has to do with the DNA, converse things in the DNA. I'm going, okay, so we're now talking kind of gobbledygook that you're not explaining well enough for people to kind of follow
what they're trying to say. Yeah.
Follow you through this. It's hard enough to get the quote unquote raving lunatics.
Yeah.
Right, to understand what they're trying to get through because they can't seem to connect.
Yeah.
What bothered me is that they're having the same hallucinations.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's not just that the blood that they found, that there's this anomaly in the blood. It's the same anomaly. Mm-hmm. They don't really know what it does, but it probably is what has caused this essentially schizophrenia, because there is no disease.
Yeah, whatsoever. There's no disease, and once they get Clarence Williams back under their control, they're able to just shift him back to the way he was.
Yeah.
Right? And he goes right back to work.
Yeah, they can dry him out, basically.
Exactly. Well, no, and it leaves you with the implication.
I don't know how.
What's that, please? What don't you know how?
This is what I don't understand. If it is not a bloodborne pathogen or anything, and they have made a shift in the DNA, is this trying to say that they can shift it back?
Yes, that is exactly what they're saying.
It's
just a series. They're saying that all of humans, like all of what a person is just a series of switches. And if you learn to manipulate that switch, you can turn it into anything you want. So he was turned into this raving lunatic, and then they just, you know, gave him the antidote.
Okay. Yeah. Well, no, they would have had to, take the switch back. But how did he accidentally?
And here's what I'm saying. I don't think it was accidental. There's a line in there that Frank says to the cab driver, which is that, you know, maybe it shouldn't be this way, but people don't listen to the insane. Like, insane people have the freedom to speak the truth, right? But they're not free, but no one listens to them, and that's the irony. That's what Frank says to the cab driver. I don't think it was accidental. I think that the implication here is that Clarence Williams was so racked by guilt for what he did to, you know, Rwanda.
Yeah, in Rwanda.
He drove himself insane because that would be the only way he would have the guts to take it public.
Yeah.
He didn't have the guts to turn on his government masters, but if he, you know, went insane, he would have no idea of the consequence. And what did he do the second he went insane? He went straight to the newspapers. I don't think that was accidental. I think that's what he wanted to happen.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. Yeah, okay, good.
Yes, yeah. No, I agree that, yes, he did this. Okay, so he did this to himself.
Yeah.
And then he tried to tell the newspapers, but of course, because he's a raving lunatic, no one listens
exactly.
to him. And then Frank helps him escape, but then they pick him up anyway. Mm-hmm. And then they reactivate his, but they must
his,
have,
you know, self, his self-preservation.
They must have done something else to him because you don't look racked with guilt anymore.
No, I but it's possible. Yes.
Yeah.
I think that's the backstory that they only hint at.
Yeah.
I think that is the backstory. I think he was racked with guilt. And I don't know that he's not still a little racked with guilt. I think he gives Frank a look when Frank asks, how can you do what you did?
Yeah.
I think he gives Frank a look. And that's what made me sure that he did it to himself on purpose to try and get the story out there. Yeah.
Because this is not accidental.
Yeah.
Right?
It
can't be accidental. He can't have caught it from somebody else.
Yes, it's a process you have to do to someone. And they've been doing it in experiments on homeless people here in America. In America. I almost said here in America.
And killing.
And then, you know, killing them and then doing these, you know, like looking over their bodies to find out what the effects are. And again, seeing how well it's going to be weaponizable, basically.
Yeah.
It's an interesting episode, but you see what I mean by, like, obviously it is structured very differently than if it would have been an X-Files episode. But at the same time, it has, you know, the kind of thing it's about with the government conspiracy and all this definitely has some X-Files vibes.
Okay, and it's because you have this episode that what happens in the third season
is set up.
This episode, I don't think it was knowingly.
No, it explicit. Spoiler alert, there's a thing about people's brains being altered in the third season. We're not going to explain how, we're not going to explain why, but if it's not said explicitly, it can be very much read as a sequel to this episode.
Yeah. I think that's, you know, without, as I said, not willingly, but here, right? I mean, it was just too, I guess, after, you know, sort of after the guy gets caught and then they find him and the whole business with the Millennium Group and Frank and as Peter does say, he said, yes, you're right. You know, cause he says, well, why did you take it? Well, I need money.
Yeah.
You know? And you guys aren't, you know, sort of dumping all sorts of jobs on me and you're not just a consultant. So I don't have a steady income here. So, I'm going to take the odd other job.
I'm going to take other jobs, and it's going to go well or it's going to not.
And the thing is that he did get his check for $10,000.
Yeah.
To go job well done once the guy got found and caught.
Yeah.
And once brought back.
Yeah. Like the sinister cabal that hired him did give him the 10 grand he was promised. So there you go. Yeah.
You know, and then he talks to Peter, and Peter says, well, yeah, you know, we're going to be invested in this now.
Yeah. You know, they're more willing to step up their responsibility to Frank, which is nice.
Yes, they're going to step up their responsibility to Frank, and they're also going to follow through trying to find patient zero.
Yeah. No, right? it is and good that... Oh, yeah, no, Peter gets involved, and it's very entertaining. And then we get,
geographic profiling again.
Geographic profiling, which is nice.
I mean, they make a better use of it than
Criminal Minds does. Yeah, they do. Yeah. It's more believable how it's handled here. It's not just drawing three circles on a map.
Yeah,
As we've talked about in the past.
In the past, no, this is, and it is, but it still is a, it's not that it's an upsetting episode. It's that it can't be upsetting because it lost me. Like,
yeah, it does. No, it is. I think it does lose you. I completely agree with that.
Yeah.
Once they have caught Clarence Williams and he's been grabbed by the fake CDC guys, the episode loses its focus.
Yep.
And it's not really clear where they're going. And it never really gets it back.
Well, you know, and then all of a sudden you get the picture of this guy in Rwanda.
Yeah.
You know, and...
And you're like, oh, wow, this came from nowhere. And I think, like, this is one of those situations where I hope, you know, someday we're able to see the original script for this episode. Because I think it would have been the story about how black people are always used as the test subject for this kind of thing would have done a lot to tie this episode together.
Yes, and making Clarence Williams, the black guy, as the head chemist for this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and if you focus on how the sacrifice is always from black people and you make him the head scientist, you would more understand why he had the mental break that made him turn himself into a schizophrenic, because only crazy people are allowed to speak the truth.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think there was a good episode here.
Yes.
I just think they didn't get to make the good episode.
Yeah, because it was for sure, you know... It was clear that it was going one place.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it kind of got messed
up. It meanders off to the side in a weird way. Totally.
In a weird way that doesn't really ever come back.
No.
And what, looking at him in Rwanda.
Yeah.
Should have been the kicker to a you know, sort of the final proof.
All of the pieces are together now. Here is Clarence Williams in Rwanda. But it doesn't feel that way.
No, it doesn't feel that way.
No, you're absolutely right.
And it's not because we're being left with a question. I think that they got that by the standards, practices and standards people at Fox.
Yeah.
Because they never clearly state what that is supposed to imply.
Yeah, I think you're right.
You know, we do not have a lot of faith.
Like you and I understand what they're saying there, that, you know, the American government and this international cabal caused a genocide to test to see if they could really make people do whatever they wanted them to.
Yeah.
That is the implication of that scene, but the show never, and I mean, it's that is very much the show's brand, to never come out and say what it means ever, ever, ever.
But I think that's why they got it by.
Yeah, that's why that was... maybe the last remaining piece of the original version of this episode they wanted to make.
Yeah, I think there was the beginning and then that last little bit, you know, like there should have been. Because this wasn't an episode that you could kind of leave up. There are no demons in this episode. There are no angels in this episode. There's no weirdness in this episode. There isn't weirdness in this episode.
Yeah.
This could be a straight up.
Well, that's why I say, like, you could have made this an X-Files conspiracy of the week episode.
Yeah.
Without too much trouble, I think.
Yeah. And I think that, but they're trying to do, you know, and it doesn't, there must have been something to make it fit better with the Millennium brand.
Than they had. Yeah, I think you're right.
And I think that maybe the two producers, right, our two guys.
Yeah. Glenn Morgan and
Chainswong.
Were not
able to carry the weight against, they didn't the have the gravitas that Chris Carter had to stick. And if this is why Chris Carter got mad at them, well, I'm going, yeah, but you're the guy that had the big guns.
Yeah, I know, right?
And if you weren't going to come in and you didn't want to, you know, the idea was that he was going to be able to focus just on
the X-Files, because that's where the money was being made.
Yes, and it makes sense.
I get it, but you know,
I get it.
I maintain that this is a better show than the X-Files. Millennium's height. Way better show than the X-Files.
Well, and this episode, I think, had something that it could do.
Yeah.
But I'm also seeing that, well, I mean, we could move on to the next episode.
Yeah, I wish we will.
The next episode where there is something you could do, could be doing within the Millennium world.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure that it quite does it.
Well, I mean, it gets close. And there's the ending. We'll talk about it as we go. All right. So the second episode, what's the title of the second episode? The Bad Seed. Is it just called The Bad Seed?
It's not called The Bad Seed.
It just is Monster. The Bad Seed. Oh, okay. Monster.
Yeah,
okay.
It is The Bad Seed.
Yeah. You're watching the Millennium Players present The Bad Seed.
Yes, that's exactly right. And you know, the only thing is the mother should have had dark hair.
Yeah, it's fine. it doesn't have to be a one-to-one recreation of the Bad Seed for us to enjoy.
You know what it is? I mean, it really is the Bad Seed.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's the mother knows, the father won't accept.
Yeah, it's the father. No, it's exactly the Bad Seed. No, I was not being that jokey about it. Like, 100%. No. This is a retelling of the Bad Seed.
Yeah, you have to go see that movie.
Yeah, if you haven't seen that movie, you owe it to yourself to check out The Bad Seed. It is really delightful.
Yeah.
It's just a fun ride. And it's basically the exact same story. Except thrown through a filter of the McMartin scandal. Yes. Right?
Yes, this
and our if that sounds familiar to you, it's because we talked about, well, maybe you already know about it, but if it's not, we talked about it extensively in a little episode called Mr. Scratch.
Yeah.
But long story short, McMartin trial involved a kid who was abused, and the mother said that the preschool did it, and then a bunch of psychologists and cops came in and essentially badgered the kids into lying and making up stories so that these people could be sent to jail. And you might be saying, wait, so the kid was abused? Yes, that's the part of the story that people generally do forget, is that the first child was being abused by his mother, who was a full stop, you know, bug nuts crazy woman.
Yeah.
Who was, you know, obsessed with the cleanliness of her son's anus and would scrub it all the time until it bled, which is, sounds horrible, but I mean, this is, who the hell knows what was going on in her life that created this fixation. But the point is, she decided that this was evidence that he was being abused, and it got pointed at the preschool, and that's where it all came from. It was really a disgusting situation.
If you have to go, and I mean, this woman was like, the mother in Sybil.
Yeah, it was that kind of, it was that level of crazy.
It was that level of crazy abuse.
Yeah.
If you haven't read Sybil, or, you know.
It's a fascinating story, the Sybil story.
Yeah. And anyway, But this, yes, it is. It is definitely the McMartin trial because they whip up all of this, and you've got this one detective and his wife who are backing up this woman because their son has been going there and is perfectly happy.
Yeah.
And you see it at the beginning, right? And she's telling stories, and the kids seem to be. She seems to care about these kids.
Yep.
And then it just snowballs
in a very realistic way.
Like, and you're watching a very early form of interventions are never done like this anymore.
No.
You know, because, no, you never, ever, ever, ever put things in the child's mouth anymore. Right? But in those days, right?
Oh, yeah, in those days, they're like, here's a list of things that you might have had done to you. Tell us which things were done to you. Gosh, I wonder what the child is going to say.
You know, I mean, and that's, you know, it's just like, and when Frank gets this thing that, you know, the detective, it was the, when did you stop beating your wife?
I know.
Right. This is, but that's what it was, right? The assumption was always, you can't let the child speak for itself. You have to, because the child can't come up with the proper words or whatever. Things. Well, no, we had to refine all of that. There are still problematic, and this, though, is, yes, and we do have this evil angel, for sure, but it is, this is interesting because it now introduces
Laura,
who has Frank's gift.
Except, well, no, she doesn't have Frank's gift. She has a guardian angel.
Yes, she's got
Frank can see the work of demons in the world, and she has a literal guardian angel.
Yes.
Who tells her things and guides her through the world.
Yeah.
Which leads to a very, very, you know, fun commentary about the changing definition and meaning of angels in mythology and the world. That I really like that speech.
Yeah. Like, this is, this is an interesting episode. She comes in because Frank is sent there.
Yeah.
To work with the prosecution. She is sent there to work with the defense.
Mm-hmm. They specifically aim them against each other to see what will happen.
Yeah, the Millennium Group. Yeah, the Millennium Group sends the two of them there.
On opposite sides.
One another.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and specifically to see how they will react with one another.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that overrides the whole daycare thing. It does.
No, I mean, it does change what the episode is about.
Yeah.
Quite effectively, yes.
But you can see this, right from the beginning, you can see the little girl.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that it's this little blonde haired girl who's evil.
Oh, yeah. They are not coy about it at all.
No, it's pretty, pretty clear. And when they do the interviews with the children, you know, so Frank and Laura,
like, all of the kids are very nervous and very questionable. And then suddenly there's this one girl who's just laying it all out.
Oh, she's saying all the things that they want to hear.
Yep.
That the district attorney wants to hear. Like, you can see smiling behind the glass because he's watching this, right?
Yeah.
And she's just doing all of this. And Frank and Laura just don't buy it.
No.
There's something wrong here, and they both know it because they're both having, she's got her guardian angel and he's got his visions. They both know there's something really wrong, so they go back to see the girl.
Yep.
Right. And then, you know, so Frank goes to talk to the little girl, Laura is talking to the parents, and then the little girl, you know, beats herself up after Frank leaves. She won't talk to Frank.
Nope.
And so that's fine.
She smashes her own face in with a with an angel.
With a dark angel.
Yep. This dark pewter angel with black wings.
Yeah. And she does it to herself.
Yep. Smashes her own jaw.
Yeah. And then Frank gets accused.
Yeah.
Because this whole thing has been happening with Jordan.
Yes.
Now, what that is, well, we'll find out later on.
Yeah.
Right. But there's Jordan who's got, you know, blood coming. And so it got reported by the dentist.
Mm-hmm. As possible child abuse.
Possible child abuse. So that's sitting there when they.
Yeah, it's sitting on Frank's record when this child makes this accusation against Frank.
Yeah. And Frank doesn't even know what's going on in.
Back in Seattle.
Portland, yeah.
Oh, sorry, yeah, back in Portland. No, it's Seattle. They live in Seattle.
Well, Seattle. And he has no idea what's going on there. That's all going on.
Because he hasn't, he's been so busy with this, you know, child monster case, he hasn't been checking his messages. Always check your messages, people. It could be something important. You never know.
So what happens, though, and then the parents come in and the father is going, what a wonderful child she was and everything else. And then finally the mother just says.
Oh, no, but I mean, it is great that like Laura is the scene where Laura manages to convince them to go and see Frank. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a really good scene where just the scene where she manages to convince them is really good. But that scene where Frank talks about, you know, his experience as a father and what it meant seeing his child born and all of this. And because he's getting the mother to the point where she can say, I never felt any of that.
I never felt any of that. And then the end of this basically is that, as she says, she said, I know that she did this to herself because I heard her.
Yeah. I heard the clump happen after you left the room. At any point, she could have just, you know, ended this. But she didn't want to publicly call. She didn't want to admit that she had raised a monster.
Yes. And well, and as we know, and then here's where the, you know, okay, you know, this is the only place where, okay, so our monsters, this is
well,
the bad.
And this is the thing I wanted to talk to you about in this episode. So is this, I mean, the thing is, Frank and Laura's point, like, take on this is that this child is a monster. And they talk about whether that this, the way she is a monster, does this mean she is a new kind of human for a new darker age? Like, they get very over the top with their statements about this little girl. But you understand, given what this little girl has done, why they would be willing to be, you know, a little hyperbolic. But the question becomes, and this is what I'm going to ask you, is the show saying that this girl, little girl, is the bad seed? Okay. Or the way you, I feel like you and I would say it, the fact that this mother says she never felt that.
Yeah.
Is that saying that this mother was never able to give affection to her daughter in a way that would have allowed her to develop a healthy, you know, empathy for other people?
Okay, this is what.
Is the episode saying? Is my question to you?
Yeah. Okay.
So, did you have the same response of not knowing what it was saying?
Well, what I would say is that the impression you get, that the primary impression you get,
is that this is a bad seed.
That this is a bad seed because when they bring up this idea, you know, is this a new kind of human? No, I would rather say that this child was from birth infected with a demon. I'd rather accept that.
It's easier.
Is this a new kind of, you know, we all know that children who do not, who have, this child has an extreme attachment disorder.
Yes.
Okay. And so she has not developed any kind of a conscience.
Nope.
You know, and this is the one place here, right, where you see the same confusion. They don't want to come down on one side or the other. This is the same confusion that Criminal Minds itself has.
No, it's weird because we actually had a conversation. It's funny because this is the actual conversation. I mean, it's worth mentioning here that we had with Breen Fraser about Mr. Scratch.
Yeah.
Which is that, of course his father was molesting kids. How else did he become a monster?
Yes.
You know, you don't become the kind of monster he is from nowhere.
Yeah.
You know?
And we don't, and that's exactly it. And here, but as I said, in some, in Criminal Minds, at times they go to that well, And at times they go to this bad seed well, right? Yeah. It is a bad seed.
Because, and that's my point. Because you've got, I mean, and at the same time, they would never say that, I mean, it's not like we got Breen Fraser to agree with us about this. But, I mean, the point is, while it's obvious to us, right, that Peter Lewis was abused as a child, and that's how you end up that way. It might not be obvious to everyone. And when you're watching this episode, you might think, because it's Millennium and because they're talking about angels, right, there's that. But at the same time, if that's all they meant, why would they put in that moment of the mother saying she never felt?
Yes.
Because that can't be you're looking into the eyes of your newborn baby and seeing a monster. Because no baby's eyes say anything when they're just born.
No.
Anything you see in your baby's eyes when it's just born is what you're projecting there. And the fact that she says she saw nothing is telling you more about her than it's telling you about the baby.
I fully agree with that. Right? That's what it is. But it leaves it open because...
Oh, it's wide open.
It's wide open. And because Laura and Frank... I mean, at least the daycare goes back to being...
I know. Daycare. Oh, that was a relief.
The parents back off and...
Although it's notable that the cop who stood behind her has to leave town.
Yes. Yeah, he leaves town with his son and his wife.
Yeah, because even though the town has, you know, forgiven and forgotten... with the woman they, you know, did a witch hunt against, they can't forgive and forget someone not going along with the herd mentality.
Yeah, because he wasn't. And plus, as far as I'm concerned, he wouldn't want to stay in this town with all these people.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But I mean, it's a nice touch at the end of the episode. In fact, I think it's so key to the episode. It like, for me, that's the key at the heart of this episode, is that one line where they have the mother say that she didn't feel anything.
Yes.
Because she never felt anything. Because you don't have to put that line in there.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Because you could have her talking, you could give her some line about, you know, when raising the child, she knew there was something wrong with her and she never wanted to admit it to herself. Well, there's so many ways you can write that scene while making this kid look like a bad seed. But taking it to the child's birth and having her say, I felt nothing, really does suggest that the people writing the show are on the ball about how attachment disorders are created.
Yes. And then, you know, you can have this, right? Because But it is weird that they had the truth. Is this a new kind of human being?
I know. Like, is the dark world being created by these people who are not connected? And like, is she the first? What is she the first? What is it that Frank says? She's the first gust of wind of a coming hurricane.
Yeah. I mean, give me a break. I don't know who wrote those lines.
It's very overdramatic. But in a way that only, you know, Lance Henriksen could deliver with perfect gravitas and just sell the hell out of that line.
Oh, yeah. No, it sells the hell. It is for sure, except that.
Yeah.
It is kind of weird because the reason the writers, I guess, gave that, because Frank is the one that's talking about this.
Yeah.
So why aren't they... Now, they don't have to tell us about attachment disorder.
No.
I mean, they've shown us that this mother doesn't have this attachment to her child and has never had an attachment to the child.
Nope.
So from the day it was born
and
has never had any other children.
Nope.
You know, and the father is just...
completely checked out.
Yeah, completely. Checked out, right? Yeah,
completely checked out, off doing man stuff while the woman is supposed to be in charge of the child and the household.
Yes, and we don't get any impression that she's physically abused the child or anything.
Nope. She just completely checked out of her child.
Yes.
And what that has created is a child who has no idea of how to connect to other people.
Yeah.
Malignant narcissist.
Yeah, when somebody does something wrong to them,
they get revenge.
And then when you can be the center of attention,
that's even better. Yeah.
People what they want to know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Better. And it is, it just is kind of weird. And you wonder,
but it's like, okay. That's what fascinates me so much about this episode, because it only puts in one line that keeps this from being a standard bad seed story. It's one line, and it's this actress's beautiful performance of seeming to demonstrate that she understands on some level that this is her fault.
Yes. Well, yeah, and she looks it. She's very good at blaming, basically saying it is her, it's my fault.
Yeah, without coming out and saying it.
Yeah, and there, no question, it does put it up in the air.
Yeah. Because the thing I want to compare it to is that second season episode of Criminal Minds, second season, about, you know, the evil redheaded 10-year-old who runs around murdering children. And it's like, no explanation whatsoever. It's like legit just, I guess red-headed children are the devil in the world of Criminal Minds.
Well, you know, we had more than one.
We did have more than one. But no, it's worth noting that there's a similarity there. Because in that episode, like, his dad is, you know, this great guy who runs the outreach to people through Meals on Wheels. And it's like, well, how did your son end up being a monster? And the show was not interested in questioning that.
No, there was, he had red hair. That was the problem.
That was enough. Yeah. That
was enough. He was probably left-handed as well.
But this episode, like,
sign of the devil. Here, there, things are more up in the air at the end of it. I just never liked that kind of line of, it's the mother that sort of changes it so that you can go, no, this is not a new kind of human being. I mean, and besides, I guess what bothers me about that is that they're in the millennium group.
Yeah.
They have got to understand all of this.
I know. It is.
Why would they think this is, and we already know that the angels and the demons are in some kind of a war, and human beings don't matter.
No.
So whatever happens amongst human beings, like, because there's an imbalance, right? We already saw that with the dog last week. So there's an imbalance. That's what it's trying to say here. There's an imbalance. Why that imbalance? It's not giving us any answers. We don't know why this mother was so removed from her child from birth.
Mm-hmm.
She probably had a very poor pregnancy. I don't know. I don't even want to go there.
Yeah, I mean, it's we would be writing our own episode if we start to wonder what the backstory there is. But everything about the way she plays it is disconnected from this child.
Yes.
She's never been interested, never been comfortable with the child. And the fact that her last line is this thing where she's just like, so she comes forward with the fact that she knows her daughter is responsible. That she knows it was a fake injury that her daughter did to herself because she heard it first. But the fact that, like,
after Frank and Laura had left, she heard her daughter.
Exactly. Do it. But the important part is, after she's confessed this and that she never, like, Frank has given her speech and confesses that she never cared and says that she knows her child is a monster. Like, the weird disassociated way she says her exit line, which is that, you know, I don't know what steps have to be taken, but I don't think he should be in jail anymore. You know, like, it's distancing herself from the proceedings as much as possible.
Yeah. And
in a really interesting way.
From her child. She is
exactly
still removed from her child.
Yeah. And I can't believe this was accidental.
No, I can't believe it either. And I suspect that they must have had, like, when we talk about it, right? I go, okay, so in the previous one, it was really messy.
Yeah.
But maybe they did want to go with the you know, with the attachment disorder thing.
Yeah.
And
they were discouraged from being that specific.
Yeah.
Yeah, because this has such a, and this has such a, I'm not going to say it's a bleak ending, because I don't think it is that bleak, but it's such a odd ending, because it both starts and ends with the daycare woman reading a fairy tale.
A fairy tale, yes. Yeah. The second one is about
Three Little Pigs.
Last one.
And it, the second it is, one. And what I find interesting about that is the images that we see, right? So we got Laura going home, right? And now her angel is gone because whatever she was supposed to deal with is over. So the angel isn't watching her anymore. Yeah. The angel only shows up when something bad is going to happen, basically, mm-hmm. is what we've been told, right? Yeah, and what, please.
Can I say, like, to the two fairy tales?
Yeah.
At both ends are violent.
Oh, yes.
Extremely violent.
Violent tales for children.
The old fairy tales, not the...
Thank you for bringing that up. But yeah, they're brutal versions.
And then this girl is in this daycare.
Is what I was about to say. Thank you. Okay, because... No, yeah, and thank you for not letting me forget about this part. Because what I wanted to get to was the show intimates that, like... this girl's lack of empathy tied to, like, added to this, right, the way that this, oh God, this daycare woman, who is a victim, casually talks about spanking the kids.
Yes.
Right? And you add that to the little girl's, right, complete lack of empathy and complete lack of connection. You're like, did she learn the violence she did from the daycare? And the answer is probably yes.
Because she's probably been in the daycare for
for 2-3 years now, right?
Yeah. So this is how you deal. Violence is how you deal with
people. Interpersonal issues.
Yes, interpersonal issues.
Yeah.
So and as I said, by bookending it with the original
violent fairy tales.
But very violent. Like
you can't escape that connection.
No. And so that is why I would say, even though they come up with this stupid, is this a new
child, kind of human?
A new child in human form. Everything else about the episode.
It's all explained.
Is telling you, without telling you, that there was something wrong in the way this child was being raised.
Yes. There is this confluence. You have a mother who didn't connect. You have a father who's completely checked out. You have her being raised by someone who uses violence casually. You put all of these things together, and everything this evil little girl does, it's like you're assembling a puzzle, and the result is a monster.
Yeah.
And it's crazy because I don't think it can be accidental. I think they had to have meant that. But the show doesn't in any way confirm that they meant that.
Yeah.
No, it's very weird because it's like all the pieces are there.
Yeah. And when you watch this, you are initially, you're watching really because the little girl is playing it just like the bad seed.
Exactly like the bad seed little girl.
Right? And of course, in the bad seed, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen
it. If you have somehow haven't seen the bad seed.
The mother had been, was a child of a murderer.
Yeah.
Her mother had been a murderer. And she had been picked up when she was like 3 years old, wandering in, and raised by this wonderful family. But she always had she had blocked. Mm-hmm. All of this business of her mother.
Yeah.
And her mother was evil, right? Mm-hmm. And so she's so terrified.
She has this bad gene, what would we now say, genes? They didn't say at the time.
And her daughter had inherited it. Yeah. And of course, she's always had that, but she would have always sort of had that fear. So the bad seed girl was also.
Yeah.
A child who had a
mother who spent her entire life like assuming that this daughter was going to turn out evil And then she did. And it's an, again, it's an in the bad seed. I never knew whether that was meant or not.
Oh, I think it was. It was.
I think so, but I'm not sure.
Well, it was the 50s.
It was. That's why I'm saying I'm not sure whether the implication, because I watched The Bad Seed, and as a child, I just think it's a horror story. I watch it again as an adult, and I'm like, oh no, they're saying that this child was programmed to be a monster by her mother spending her whole life assuming she was going to turn into a monster. She didn't have any choice but to become one because her mother was never close to her and her father was never there. You know, her mother kept her at arm's length because she was certain that she was going to turn out bad. How do you get it to turn out bad? You keep them at arm's length when you're their friggin' parent.
Yeah.
Like, it's there in The Bad Seed and it's there here. And I think it was intentional. I'm sure it was intentional here. I think it was intentional in The Bad Seed, but I've never been sure in The Bad Seed.
Well, I think The Bad Seed, they were trying to go for the genetic thing.
Yeah. I mean, it's called The Bad Seed.
Yes. And whereas here you have this other thing going on, it's just that that one line, this one line is like this kind of weird, weird, anomalous thing that is what? Trying to take it back to the idea of the Millennium Group. I don't know, but I don't think. And it's probably... If anything, it is the book ending.
Yeah. No, you're right. I hadn't thought about it that way. For me, I just focused on that one line from the mother, right? But now that you point out that it's book ending with the old versions of fairy tales and suggesting that this kid was being raised in a violent milieu, and if all the other kids had perfectly happy home lives with parents who could explain the difference between fantasy and reality and blah, 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 blah. But this one little girl was at a disadvantage.
Yeah, that's how you would see it.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about it that way. But now that you pointed out, I think that's another clue. I thought there was just one clue in this episode. You've convinced me there are two.
Yes, that they are trying to just say that, look, this child was ultimately didn't stand a chance.
Yeah.
And it came out earlier than this. She would have been a problem later on.
Yeah. But a confluence of circumstances allowed her flaws, her mental problems to be revealed sooner than they would have been.
By the time she was like, she's about 5 years old, right?
Because they're still 5, 6 years old, something like that. Yeah. Oh yeah. Cause she's not even in grade one yet. So she's 5 years old and they don't have an organized like kindergarten in this small town. Mm-hmm. So yeah, they're in preschool instead.
Yeah.
Oh, it's such a good
episode.
Anyway. Yeah. No, it really is a good episode. I mean, it's a good episode. But it's an episode that asks, and again, this is something that like we just don't see anymore. It is an episode that asks a lot from the person watching it.
Again, yes.
It's something that, you know, what other show than Millennium is willing to ask this much from its audience, right?
Well, it's, as I said, and it would be like the, the episode. Oh, no, I forgot.
Which one?
It asks a lot. It's like the Mormon episode.
Oh, yeah. Exactly like the Mormon episode.
That's, you know.
Where, it doesn't hand you anything.
No. So you're stuck.
I'm sorry. He had an affair with Deputy Kevin. It's the only way that episode makes sense.
That's the only way the episode makes sense.
100%. The affair was with Deputy Kevin. Because Kevin's role in the episode, why is he even there if he's not the one the guy had an affair with?
Yeah.
You know? That's my point.
Yep.
Oh, God. The what do you call it? The disgust that you get from the marriage counselor. You know? Yeah. The disgust she has for talking about the sheriff.
Yeah.
Like it's all right there. You just have to be paying attention. Whereas here, again, it's hard to see what they're doing here.
Yeah.
Because if you watch this episode, if you weren't paying attention, and if you didn't bring, I'm going to say, a good amount of specific knowledge about the subject matter, you could watch this and assume it's a story about a bad seed, but I don't think it is.
No, I don't. I don't think it is, despite
Laura's statement and despite Frank's statement.
Yeah. Simply because of the way it's structured.
Yeah.
Because, and, you know, then she's just an old-fashioned woman, and most of the time the kids are just fine.
Yeah. She spanks them when she does. She spanks them when they do bad, and she hugs them when they do well.
Yeah. And remember that at one point, Frank, I mean, he goes in. Now, she is not. And the other thing that you can say about this is that, first of all, Frank sees the paddle she uses to spank. It's how okay, and then he does go in, and she does give the children tranquilizers to put them to sleep for their nap time.
She's got this bottle, the thing of tranquilizers, and she's cut them down into quarters so that their child dose.
Yeah, so.
Because she wants to make sure they get their nap.
And I'll bet you the children don't, the parents don't know that one either.
Oh, I'm sure not. Of course not.
So now we can understand how these children all grow up to be drug abusers because, you know.
They got started young.
Yeah.
Ugh.
It's a way of controlling all of
it. It is a very good episode that again, and this is, you know, I think what kills this show in a lot of ways is this episode, to get enough out of it, just asks for so much from its audience.
Yeah. I think that that's what it is.
Oh, and the cop who's desperate to prosecute this lady is the guy from the X-Files who had the ability to control people's minds.
Yeah.
Who got people to kill themselves. Same actor.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just fun. The guy from Push. Or Pusher, whatever it was called. And he came back in a second episode, who got a brain tumor that let him have psychic powers.
Yeah.
Nice seeing that actor in a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
We haven't seen Nicholas Lay yet. Maybe we will at some point, and I just don't remember it.
We'll see.
All right, but yeah, it's a damn good episode.
Yeah, the second one is a damn good episode.
The first one is just muddled.
Yeah, there's something went wrong with that episode.
Yeah,
for sure. And now we know what went wrong with the episode. Yeah, so they had to come up with something else, and what they came up with isn't.
Yeah.
Satisfying.
It's just not satisfying as it would have been had they been allowed to make it about the way black people are treated by these medical communities. I mean, it's like when this episode came out, we're a full 10 years from The Constant Gardener coming out. So people weren't ready for that story yet.
Yeah.
Is my take on what happened here. I don't think, at least if you believe, you know, Fox executives, people weren't ready for that story yet.
Yes.
All right. So next week we have episode 5. I don't remember what episode 5 is. You're going to look that up while I talk. What's it called?
I will tell you, A Single Blade of Grass.
Means nothing to me. I don't remember that episode at all. I'm sure I'll remember it when I'm watching it. But, you know, off the top of my head, that means nothing to me.
Read you the first.
Yeah, give me the synopsis. Go for it.
A Native American doomsday cult targets Frank after he joins forces with a female archaeologist to investigate the ritualistic murder of a Native American man.
Okay.
Found at an archaeological site in New York City.
Well, this could get real bad real fast, so I'm interested to see how they handle this one. But more importantly, the second episode next week is The Curse of Frank Black. Thought by many to be the best episode of the show. Stars Dean Winters, one of our favorite actors.
Yep.
Just this episode, I remember it being as good as The Reputation. I'm interested to see if I'm remembering it right. There's a lot of episodes I've been very excited to revisit. I think this might be like at the top of that list. Because spoiler alert, a lot of the show I haven't rewatched. I've rewatched Somehow Satan Got Behind Me a ton. And I've watched The Mikado more times than I can count. Because I think The Mikado is just a perfect hour of television. Yeah. Like, I can't believe how well made that is. We're only 3 weeks away from getting there.
Yeah.
But anyway, we'll talk about The Mikado when we get to The Mikado. For right now, we are going to be watching...
A Single
Single Blade of Grass and The Curse of Frank Black. Wow. For his $10,000 for services rendered. Oh, Frank.
You can't. And he rips up the check.
We didn't mention it.
I bet it was so confusing. I'm going, why are you ripping up the check? Jeez.
Come on, Frank. And this is, by the way, the problem I always have, because you think you're going to, you know, be corrupted by getting money from villains, to which I respond, so you'd rather villains have that money? You think it's better that villains hold on to all their money? Take the villains' money. Believe me, you will put it to better use than they will.
Then they will. And let me put it this way. It's the love of money that's the problem, not money.
Yeah. It's right there in the Bible, nice and clear. Love of money is the root of evil.
Yeah.
It's not the money that's the problem. It's needing money. It's wanting money. It's having.
No, it's not needing money. Needing money is one thing.
Sorry, no. Needing money on a, you know, on a more metaphysical level. Having what Tolkien called dragon sickness, which is, and it's a perfect metaphor because dragons don't need money.
No.
Dragons? What's a dragon going to spend money on? It's a dragon. They take the money just to have money.
They're Scrooge.
Exactly. Scrooge ain't spending that money on. Scrooge ain't living high on the hog.
No.
He wants the money, so he has the money.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. No, it's a very, very good. Because that's the thing. It's like it goes beyond simple greed. And that's why I do love the idea of dragon sicknesses, which is these billionaires all build hordes of money. That they don't need, that they could never use. They could never use in 1,000 years, right? But they just want it. Yeah. And so it becomes this twisted, self-fulfilling thing where you do worse and worse things to get more and more money because you always need more and more money. It's an addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, spoiler alert, being rich is a mental illness. I'm just saying, like, every test they do on rich people shows that they're messed up people who have less empathy and can't relate to other people. Being rich is a mental illness. You know, one of my favorites was they're like, you know how they do a test that pretends to be something else, right? You know, they have you in for a test, but really the test is the thing you did while you were in the waiting room. So they did one of these where the test was to, you know, fill out this survey, but the real test was the waiting room. And what happened in the waiting room was, there was a bowl of chocolates and they're like, you can have chocolate if you want. And then casually mentioning during the thing that, at the end of the day, you know, the chocolates get, given to the kids coming out of the kindergarten next door, whatever chocolates are left over. And the richer the person doing the test was, the more likely they were to take a chocolate from that bowl.
Yeah.
Because, yes, rich people will steal candy from babies. They will. It's Mr. Burn stuff. Because a normal person will think, well, I might like this candy, but think about how happy that child will be, you know, getting some candy at the end of their day of preschool, and they don't take the chocolate for themselves. Whereas the rich people don't care about other people. Because how are you going to get rich caring about other people? So yeah, it is not just a value neutral thing. Being rich literally makes you a worse person psychologically. Something to keep in mind.
You're all right. Gonna have to be.
No, hey, not something we have to worry about. Believe you me.
That Millennium won the People's Choice Award in 1997?
For what?
Millennium.
Yeah, but what People's Choice Award?
For People's Choice. Okay,
like best best drama, best
favorite television show.
Jesus, that is insane.
I know, eh?
Wow. Okay, yeah, there you go. I'm genuinely surprised at that.
It gets a lot of nominations. I'm just looking here. I'm just going through all of these. Yeah, they get, it's weird. Yeah. You know, and the NAACP, he was a nominee for that episode, Clarence Williams, the third.
I'm not surprised. No. I think he would have won it had they managed to make the episode they wanted to make.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if he had won it in that condition. They
won Canadian Society of Cinematographer Awards. They won...
it's a gorgeous show. I'm not surprised that the cinematographer got an award for it.
3 years.
All 3 years? Wow. Again, it's the best looking show on television at the time. Like, look at how good this show looks consistently. And I'm sorry to keep having to harp on Criminal Minds, but it's like, you know, Criminal Minds, flat lighting. You know, walk into every room. It's just evenly lit from every angle, so they don't have to waste time between camera setups.
Yeah.
That is not something they were... Wasting time between camera setups is not something they were worried about on Millennium. Like, they were making a beautiful show. Of course, it helps that, like, on Criminal Minds, they got to worry about 8 actors in every scene. Are all 8 actors lit well? Whereas in Millennium, it's just Frank Black.
Yeah.
It's just like, how do we light Lance Henriksen? Oh, it turns out with that face, it's impossible to light it badly. All right, so that's that. If you have any questions, if you have any comments, if there's any profiling related fiction you'd like us to check out after we're done Millennium, drop us a line and we will be very at profilingcriminalminds@gmail.com, and we'll be happy to hear from you. If you're listening to this on an app or podcatcher, please be sure to rate and review it. That's how people find about the show. We'll see you back here for 5 and 6 of Millennium Season 2. But until then, I'm going to say that's right. Au revoir.
And have a good week.